20 years. Oh, fuck this episode up.
Remember, you won't have an episode this week. Your fans will be... Alright, I have just come back from Mexico. Welcome back, everyone.
Yes.
And you have come back from?
The West, the Moab and Canyonlands and Zion National Park. How about you?
Zion National Park. I was in Disneyland last week.
Oh, you were at the... You went to the Star Wars place.
Yes.
What do you think?
It was good. It was decent. I mean, they opened a new ride right after we left.
Right after you left.
They were waiting for you to leave.
Yeah, but it's fun. Interesting. <All right. laughs> Well, I hope that all of our listeners and viewers were able to enjoy the three parts of our interview with Will. So that's what I really hope.
Okay.
Let's start. Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Abarca with Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. And today we will be discussing the recent rise of massive protests in Latin America. And this has been, some say, dubbed as the Latin American Spring. So we will delve into that. It has been, I think some of it hasn't been covered, and mm-hmm. the ones that have been covered, like Venezuela, tend to be here, the media tends to be covering that as a way to justify maybe some US American intervention. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we will be discussing that, and maybe I will also share some of my experience coming back from Mexico, where I had saw some protests amongst all of these that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenny here is with us because he is always delving into some issues that give us some other alternative view or even cause some instigation into like why we should pay attention to what happens in Latin America. Which I will say, some have said that it's considered a forgotten continent.
Yes, I mean, and I mean, we talked to this week and I was more... like thinking about like the Democratic Party, the candidates, things like that. No, I'm just saying like,
yeah.
and you were like, no, you didn't want to do that. Right?
No.
Yeah.
The Democratic Party has plenty of time. This is happening now.
No. So I'm
busy with the impeachment. So
which I do believe is related to what the United States is doing in that hemisphere, actually. Right. So,
oh.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see why you say that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but I, there's a reason why you don't want to cover that. Like, what's your major reason for thinking we should be discussing this? Which I think it should be discussed, but why do you feel like this should be discussed right now?
I just said why.
I don't
know. Because of the rise in this, okay. Especially this month, there has been an increase in...
It's ongoing protests.
Yeah, in Haiti, in Chile. And it was... Dilokin.
I mean, we're about to get mass coverage of what's going on in France to a degree.
Right.
But, I mean, South America has been going through... massive protests in the last 2 months.
Yeah.
I mean, in Bolivia, in Chile, in Colombia, Ecuador as well a while back. But I think that Bolivia, Chile, and Colombia are very significant for the geopolitics of the region, not just now, but historically. And so that's why I wanted to cover it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how we want to dive into
it. Well, let's delve into it. What has... I mean, if we look at these protests, it seems to be that there has just one spark or one, ¿cómo se dice chispita?
There's a spark,
and then you have massive flame. Let's look at Chile, with the rise in the metro prices.
Yeah.
What happened in Ecuador? There was the IMF sort of subsidy and gasoline prices that were trying to be negotiated with the IMF because of the IMF bank trying to the austerity measures in Ecuador.
Yeah.
And so the indigenous people rose up with left-leaning students. What happened in Bolivia, right? We had a left-wing-leaning president who, yes, I am not in agreement that he should have overstayed his time in his office, but he was being ousted because of the because of the right-wing populism that is trying to overtake in Bolivia and has been a military coup that the US intervened with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think these are reasons for, if it's privatization, austerity measures, political scandals and corruption, and I think the middle class, where there was this maybe 12-year period of optimism and growth that has happening, and the 2008 crisis didn't affect so much South America as it affected Europe and as affected the USA and Asia. It really didn't affect as much as South America. And so I think that you're going to speak to some of the things that have, like foreign debt and IMF and the World Bank. I think that we can bring up.
Yeah.
But I think that what I'm trying to say is that these things are important for us to look at, especially as I think most people are starting to realize that it's not working. These neoliberalist policies are not functioning in our world. These aren't things that are happening. They're not...
Not for the masses.
For the masses.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So the way I see it
for
is...
The you're right, yeah. Because it is functioning for some and not for others.
I mean, they're working as they're supposed to work.
Yeah, I meant to say this.
And I think that one of the things that is happening worldwide is that the promise of neoliberalism of, you know, closing the gap of between the rich and the poor, you know, of, you know, creating growth, of, you know, eliminating the nasty... fascist nationalism that, you know, led us to war, you know, in the last century, the Second World War. A lot of these things, it's obvious that, you know, neoliberalism has failed miserably. And I think it's obvious why, you know, it's to me. I mean, it's capitalism doing its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of these countries like Nicaragua, like Bolivia, it's, and even Chile, left-leaning governments putting their destinies on like a sort of reformist capital, like a way, you know, a controlled capitalism, and obviously capitalism has crises inevitably, and people change their minds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, these are socialism from the top down, and you know they can be removed. You know, there's coups. But I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Well, yeah. It's. I think it's interesting that we talk about it. Is it being talked about like the Latin American Spring? Is that? I mean, because
I know there is a term.
First off,
let's speak. I think it comes in waves.
Right.
That were starting in 2010. That I think it was a first wave, and then the second wave, and I think we're in a greater wave.
Right.
Here.
Right. Well, let's just remember that the Arab Spring, you know, came and went. Yeah. You know, and the African Spring has come and is going. You know, and I think there's a way that it's just, I don't think we want to like make it seem like everything's going in one particular direction right now, because clearly in Latin America, mm-hmm. we haven't had a wave. We had a wave of people banging pots in Nicaragua right now.
Yeah.
I mean, not sorry, Colombia right now, and during the strikes, that's where they're banging the pots. Well, they did that in Argentina,
mm-hmm.
right? They did that 8 years ago. They were banging pots.
Yeah.
And where are they now?
Now
it's right wing, you know, governments coming in. And similar with in Bolivia, how do we call that a spring when clearly that was a left wing, that's a movement towards socialism.
Yeah.
This is a political party that is talking about implementing socialism by controlling the state. That's what that means, Mas, right? And I mean, they talk about it being about the elections like that. The real reason that they were able to get rid of him is because Evo turned out to be not all the things that the people, the indigenous people and the working people there. He made some changes, but for the most part, it was about letting China come in. It was letting the capitalists come in and cutting deals with whatever capitalists they could cut, so they could maybe ice out the United States, but bring in other wealthy and other capitalists essentially. And that's why it's not. And in reality, people didn't so much abandon him ultimately as much as Mas abandoned the people.
Yeah.
And now Mas has actually agreed to new elections.
Mm-hmm.
And basically has given the rubber stamp to the right wing push to, I mean, they're basically saying, yeah, we're going to have new elections and we're not going to have,
Evo Morales.
Morales be part of it. So there's a lot of currents and cross currents. There was a wave going through Latin America only 8 or 9 years ago that led to Lula, that led to Evo Morales, mm-hmm. led to all these things. And that wave crashed across the rocks and brought all these right wings to power.
Yep.
Now we have a new wave starting in Chile. I can say we can sit here and celebrate such a thing. You know what I'm saying? But how many times do we have to see these waves
mm-hmm.
come in and then have no real alternative ultimately, and then just be gobbled up by the right wing, so it leads to another another push of the right in those regions. And so I think that's what I want to kind of get at a little bit, is that there's currents and cross currents here.
Yeah.
Because at the very same time, we're seeing movements in Chile and in Colombia. And and Colombia is like, definitely, that's a right-wing government that's being challenged by its people.
Let us not forget Puerto Rico as well.
You know, I don't know as much about, well, that was recent, right?
Yeah, that
right.
was recent.
And Ecuador?
Ecuador, yeah.
So I just think that we have to ask ourselves, what's taking place here? It's not up, up, and away, because at the very same time, that while these movements in Chile can be like, oh great, that's great, class struggle, but class struggle is an aspect of capitalism. You're going to have class struggle when you have one class on top, capitalist class, smashing another class that exists. So of course you're going to see class struggle. The question is what will that class struggle produce? Because we've seen these things produce time and time again, nothing but disappointment and ashes in people's mouth, and then people stop believing even socialism altogether. That's sort of that's a negative take on my part,
yeah.
But that's kind of where I'm coming from on this.
Is it your take then, Andy, that I'm trying to figure out, if is it your take that these massive protests have no significance instead?
Is that what you hear?
No, I'm just trying to figure out like how. Yeah, I understand that.
I'm saying that. I think me and Kenny understand that these are come down to aspects of capitalism, that and the player right now is the United States, right? The reason I say that this is directly connected to Ukraine and what's going on with the impeachment is because that's about what we're seeing with the impeachment is about U.S. imperialism expressing itself. Are we going to fight Russia? Or are we going to fight China? Well, guess where they're fighting Russia and China right now? They're fighting Russia in Venezuela, and they're fighting China in Bolivia. That's what they're talking about. Chinese have made massive in-gains into South America. So when the United States says we're fighting Russia and China, and they can't pick which one, the Democrats say we're going to fight Russia, and Trump says we want to fight China, then that's U.S. imperialism expressing itself and saying, which side are you on? And the entire U.S. working class is figuring out which side it's on. Do we want to fight Russia? Or do we want to fight China? Why do I say that the entire working class is doing that? Because there's nothing independent of the Democratic Party, and the entire socialist movement is trapped within the Democratic Party under the name of the DSA. So that's our situation. So what's taking place in South America is an expression of the Monroe Doctrine, and it's a fight that the U.S. is winning right now over how it's going to fight Russia and China in its backyard, in the U.S. backyard. That's what they call it, the U.S. backyard. And they've got the entire Organization of American States lined up to go behind it.
Yeah.
So this is a wonderful thing that's taking place right now. And is the movement in Chile a challenge to U.S. imperialism? I say no.
How so?
Because it's not about socialism. It's not the working class basically saying, we're taking everything. That's ultimately, because the U.S. has been able to survive time and time again.
I think there are elements of that. I mean, it's not to the degree that it will make anything significant happen, but there are labor unions going on strike, you know, and they've had, shown support for the strikes. And Chile has a long history of, you know, attempting socialism. Yeah, it's been like democratic socialist.
Right.
You know, and, you know, like top down type of stuff. But I think it is significant to me. That's the reason why I think Chile in particular is very relevant to this conversation, because, you know, that's where a lot of the experimentation that has led to the world we have now has happened, you know, at least in Latin America. And
with Pinochet.
You know, yeah.
It's the starting ground for the what's that called? The Chicago plan,
yeah.
And setting up neoliberal projects all throughout the South America.
And so, yeah, I mean, like for me, some of this stuff is about memory. You know, it's about remembering that, you know, the few things that we've gained, you know, the still, you know, like the 8-day work week, or little things that were gained through fighting and, you know, through socialist ideas, you know, did happen. It took effort. It took organization. It took, you know, the ability to strike, and obviously we'll take that again and more. But that's why I think Chile is significant. That it's not just like a sporadic, you know, random. You know, and none of these things are random. You know, these are for me obviously an accumulation of grievances. And yeah, they can be just a revolt or a revolution. Likely just a revolt. You know, just people, you know, frustrated and having different grievances, you know, different sectors participating differently, maybe not even connecting their fights. But at least some of the stuff that's coming out of Chile, you know, directly, you know, challenging neoliberalism, because again, that's in their memory. I think, and that's why I think it's an interesting case study to see what springs out of there, because, you know, listening to you in the past, like, you know, can revolution start somewhere else? You know, I don't know. Like, where, if Chile can be that. We don't know until it fully materializes, right? I mean, and those things are playing out right now. And I don't know if we have the perspective yet to even see, you know. But I do see elements of, you know, some of the stuff that we'll need here. In Chile, you know, just to give a little context, Chile has been paraded, you know, in the world as, you know, a top-performing economy. A lot of people don't know that Chilean citizens can come to the U.S. Without having to apply for a visa. You know, just like Europeans can come to the U.S. because their economy has been great. You know, we want your Chilean money. But I don't know, that might change. But that happened because, you know, oh, so Chile is performing well. They're, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do, which, you know, implement, you know, the Washington consensus, neoliberalism. I mean, I don't know if we need to talk about those things, what those things mean. So I don't know. That's why I think Chile is significant.
We have to remember the history of Chile. There was a time when there people did not go out and protest because of the former dictatorship. And people were afraid. And this new generation, people who are coming out, mostly around our age, I think, right? That are now stepping up and saying, we are not afraid anymore.
But even before that, like, Chile was influenced by a Bolshevik revolution.
Yes.
You know, and there was, you know, attempts at, you know, creating socialism. It eventually led to Allende.
That people saw it through the, because so go ahead and say it, because this is what I'm going to say. I think it's not about starting with the fascist Pinochet.
Yeah.
But what came before that?
Yes, exactly. And like a reformist movement.
Right. And a socialist reformist movement that, ultimately, there was an independence, there were cordones, there were workers' councils set up in Chile, but they subordinated themselves to Allende and the cause of essentially the Bernie Sanders or the Evo Morales. Yeah.
And there was a break in the Chilean...
Right, and workers needed to arm themselves and they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and basically they took the cause behind Allende, and where did that lead?
Yeah.
Did that lead to... we didn't get socialism, that's too bad. It led to Pinochet.
To fascism for, what, 20 years?
Yes. So that's what I'm saying, is when you don't get socialism, when you don't get the dictatorship, the proletariat, you get fascism. If you're going to challenge neoliberalism, you cannot challenge neoliberalism without taking down capitalism. There is no challenge to neoliberalism independent of working class taking on capitalism. So if that's not happening, and class struggle does not mean workers are making a revolution. It means it's an aspect of capitalism because you have an oppressed class and you have a majority oppressed class with a minority above them. So you're going to have class struggle. That's just normal. That's like you're going to have gravity.
So what does this, you know...
And it's not me saying, oh, forget it then. Because obviously, we talked about the yellow vest. They've lasted longer. And now you are seeing, I agree, you're seeing in France the yellow vests meet up with the students, meet up with the striking workers. But at the very same time, I have no indication. In fact, the only party that's being trumpeted as something like a something that's even close to a revolutionary party is this Argentinian left group, which really everything I hear about them is just reformist. It's Bernie Sanders light or Bernie Sanders not light. Like, it's a version of the Bernie Sanders stuff. That's the one that the left is even saying is doing it right, and they're just doing Bernie Sanders, doing it in DSA kind of stuff. So I guess, and it's not me going like, well, nothing. It's just me saying we now have to start taking stock of what's really happening and what's really there on the ground, and do we see anything that can actually truly challenge what's taking place? Because we are running out of time. I don't believe we're running out of 12-year time because of global warming. I believe we're running out of time because we're heading towards war. Global war, you know, world war. And so the question I have for myself is there anything on offer in that region? Not like, oh, I hope so, or I, but do we know, do we see something that's actually producing has the determination to reproduce what the Bolsheviks did in Russia. Yeah. And that, and you, I don't believe you can get there by accident. I don't believe you get there spontaneously. I think you have to set a course for taking down capitalism, and it has to be set within the working class that's doing that. And that, I don't, again, if we don't see that, I'm not interested in celebrating things that are just normal aspects of class-divided society.
I agree with you. However, then we've talked about how we are pretty far away from anything close to any revolution. To me, there is an aspect of memory, like I said before, you know, that we don't... You know, that we've been completely robbed of language and understanding, you know, how this system works. We just accept it and apply it, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, even economists, you know, there's very few, you know, economists that will criticize the system. Basically, we have system managers, you know, people that don't give a shit. They don't know what, you know, the Washington Consensus is. You know, it's just like the Washington Consensus is, you know, policies that basically reduce taxes for, you know, corporations, open markets for corporations to move between countries while keeping, you know, labor, you know, contained with their countries, you know, selling off of state assets. And so that's the Washington Consensus. And it's being applied in every country, and people are revolting. So my question is, again...
And they have been for some time. Though. Sure. This is like the third round of it, you know, like...
Yeah, but I personally think that the language, you know, it is changing. You know, the understanding of, you know, certain things, and there are voices rising up, and that's my hope. So then, where do we begin?
And I'm not saying, like, that's not happening, but...
Sure.
Maybe tell me some of those things you...
I mean, see. Like, labor groups are, you know, jumping into, you know, attacking these... directly these policies, generally, because in the past it's been, you know, oh, this government, that government, they're focused on the policies, that regardless of the government, you know, like even Bachelet applies some of this shit, you know, which is, you know, like a democratic socialist, you know, like you ask people about in Chile, like I've heard quotes, you know, people being interviewed of you know, what is this about, you know, what is this process is not about the 30 fucking pesos that they raise, you know, like 4 cents they raise on the fare, it's about the last 30 fucking years. Mm-hmm. It's about those policies, you know, that, you know, are ravaging everyone. So, you know, where is a good start? Where do we start? You know, for me, there has to be, and that, you know, hopefully, you know, there, you know, those people with those left ideas, you know, socialist ideas, get up more of a voice, right? That's the hope that we have here.
Those aren't socialist ideas. Those might be socialists putting forward reforms, positive reforms. But let's be clear, what does that normally mean? That normally means a political party coming to the fore that stands for those things, that puts itself up forward as the one who's going to make that happen. That's Syriza in Greece. That's Lula in Brazil. That's Evo Morales in... And so, I'm saying that yes, it just like in France, it's meaningful that the yellow vests are joining with the trade unions, but the demands are strictly, very much strictly within the lines of reform, and I see nothing, I hear nothing that indicates there's a voice within that crowd saying this is not enough, we have to go farther. If that voice was there, I'd be saying listen to them. And of course, they'd be a small voice, but I don't even hear that voice. And maybe they're there. I don't know. But that to me is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that. It's like when in World War I, prior to it starting, and we had mass socialist parties in Germany and everywhere else, all the socialist parties basically supported their countries in the war. And the number of socialists, there were a small number of socialists who said, we're not supporting any part of this war. Yeah. And we're even calling for the defeat of our own governments in their part of the war. And we're going to be considered German agents in our country or whatever. And that was part of what became the Zimmerwald Conference. And they said the number of people who could fit inside that conference were like in a stagecoach. They went to that. There used to be millions of socialists. Now they're like 15, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I need to hear. I need to know where those people are. I need to know where that group is. Because so far, and I'm going to be called a purist. I'm going to be called ultra-left. I'm going to be called, oh, you're just demeaning. They don't need my approval to go striking. They didn't ask, nor should they be asking. I'm just saying, let's be clear. This is about socialism. This is about taking down capitalism. So for me, the thing that's going to get me excited within the context of that class struggle is if there's something that's being articulated that actually has a chance of going through, of punching through ideologically at the same time the class struggle is taking place. Because if that's not there, it's game over already. That's how I feel. Because we've seen that time and time again.
I think, though, there is a significance when you see, for example, Kenny brought up something when we were talking that he had said that there was this feminicide movement that had started in Chile that spread over to Peru, Ecuador, España, and Mexico, and I forget the all of the countries, but even here there was a few in the USA, where on Monday it was the International Day of the Elimination of the Violence Against Women, and there was this chant that was performed throughout all of these protests. And in Mexico, and when I was there, there were 3,000 people that were protesting at in El Zócalo, which is like the very big Plaza Center, I think. I don't know how to describe un Zócalo. So, but it's a very spacious place. And I think when you see that there is like a contagiousness, I think that I have some hope in, like we were discussing as well, when we talk about labor movement here, or when we're talking GM, or the teachers union, or the Kaiser strikers, I think that there, when you see that protests are happening about, it can inspire other people to rise up. And so I'm not saying that these protests are going to lead to the overthrow of the government. I would love to see that. But I think that if we were to continue this mobilization, I think that more people would feel inspired to say, you know what, this isn't fair and I can do something about it. And I'm not going to just sit about and wait for something. I don't know. It feels that contagiousness, as you had said, could be something, an element that we could use to harness so that we are able to mobilize the people.
I mean, like, at least for me personally, obviously, you know, ideas are as good as, you know, you put them into practice, right, and get results. But like, some things that have changed is like me talking about this stuff and trying to share my perspective is people reading more, Rosa Luxemburg or Marx, you know, or asking questions and deconstructing a lot of the, you know, the like the indoctrination or the complete rejection, immediate rejection of these, you know, or engaging in conversations of, you know...
Talking about this now?
Yeah, Stalin. And I mean, obviously, just having a conversation is enough. We cannot fight capitalism just in, you know, ideas. But it's a beginning. And I've definitely had some people come over to the, you know, the dark side, if you will. Like, that they're starting to read this stuff and talk about this. And, you know, and so when I, you know, when we talk... And I do hear some of these voices. Yeah, there may be individual... And yes, you know, a lot of the mainstream is heading to reform, but I mean, so then what? Like, how do we go about this? I mean, how do we start this? How do we, you know? I think it's a learning process, and I don't know if we have again. Yeah, we don't have time for various reasons, but
like, so I guess because I think people hear me and they think I'm like, no, you're against the movements or something like that, and it's like, I don't. The movements don't need me to be for them or against them to exist.
Yeah.
Capitalism will produce those movements. But it was interesting. So here, this is, I guess, a mic. When Will, the person, the guy from the Navy,
we
interviewed, and on the third episode, I didn't know this, you didn't know this either, that one of the reasons he became a socialist was not just because he was so disappointed about 9/11 or disappointed about the military or disappointed... He had a brother who was a Red. He had a brother who was a Red asking him questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was meaningful to me. It reminded me that people don't just come to this stuff just like on their own.
Yeah.
You know, and unless they got a brother, unless they got somebody around them who's basically asking that kind of question, the ideas fall back into that reformism. Because the actions might be revolutionary, but you need ideas to match that, yeah. You know? And if you don't have them, then the capitalists are going to put ideas in place. They're going to put feminists in politics in your place. They're going to put identity politics in your place. Politics that are not capable of taking on capitalism. They're not. Identity politics, they don't solve the problems. Of course they'll spread. They're already there. Reformist politics spread because they already are in play.
Yeah.
You know, women's rights are going to be a crucial aspect of any movement. And if they're not, then it's not a movement that can transform society. But if it's not animated with the idea of we are going to achieve women's rights or fight racism with the dictatorship of the proletariat in power, then you might as well just say it's not going to happen, because it has to be animated with the idea that workers must take power to challenge racism, to challenge women's, to challenge sexism, to challenge homophobia, all those elements of oppression. If that is not what's animating, if that understanding is not animating that fight for those things, then it's not a fight capable of actually winning. Mm. And so if it's not a fight capable of winning, then why are we celebrating it? Because there's plenty of ways for those things to be. It's like, oh, well, this is going to lose again, because we've seen it time and time again. How many times we got to watch the same movie? I mean, it's like, you know, I go to these stupid superhero movies, but at least they show different characters. But if I went to the movie each time and saw the same movie and I said, I wonder what's going to happen, I'd be kind of foolish. Like, I think I know what's going to happen at the end of Endgame. And I don't think it goes so well for Black Widow. You know? And so, but if I went to the next movie of Endgame and said, I wonder if Black Widow's going to survive, spoiler alert, you know, then you'd say, wait, didn't you see this movie? Yes, this is my fifth time seeing it, but this time I think she's going to live.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, now I'm a fool. So I think not for this guy, because he's going to jump on the train later, you know, but for you.
Sorry. I always wait.
But
I'm at the station.
But I think for people, and I wonder if Greg's going to listen, because we argue about this, and he definitely doesn't agree with me on this. But for revolutionaries at this point, we have to set a higher bar for how we think about.
Yeah.
And dissect and learn, because the lesson learned out of this is the lesson of why we are so doomed here in the United States through the Bernie Sanders stuff. This lesson of Evo Morales, of all the lessons we learned out of this, is that look how weak our shit is over here in the United States with thinking that Bernie Sanders, and we think this is going to bring something. Mm-hmm. When I can already say Chile is not weak, that's some shit going on there. But ain't going to produce anything unless it's animated with something that's independent, working class, and prepared to take power and take shit from the capitalists.
And that's why I'm saying, let's wait and see. I don't know. But, I mean, if there's any hope out of anywhere, even the U.S. or even fucking France, I actually have more hope in Chile, because they have that memory that I think is important. That, you know, that there is, you know, between generations, mm-hmm. is transfer. Where here we've been like completely, you know, people don't understand, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution. You know, I talk to people that are studying economics. They don't even know what the Washington Consensus is.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, or who the hell Milton Friedman is, or you know, yeah. Or we immediately, you know, talk about Marx and you know, fuck Marx. And I've never read it, but fuck Marx. And I'm like, So Chile, I think, I don't know. Yeah, the odds are they're going to end up in fascism, you know, and in some shit, you know, again. But
let's not say that. Let's take a minute.
Yeah. The thing I'm looking for is just that little kernel of, is there a group there that's basically saying, and even in the hurricane of the movement, mm-hmm. saying, comrades, sisters and brothers and sisters, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. If there's just one group saying that, and part of it, but still saying it ain't going to work. Look, asking for these weak reforms ain't going to work. Then I do have more hope. But if that group ain't there, that group has to exist.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to exist because I'm saying it's going to have to exist. We need to produce that kind of determination and bad news people here. You know, because the good news people, inspiration doesn't work, folks. Yeah. It doesn't work. The working class does not need inspiration. It's not inspiration that makes working class struggle. It's capitalist oppression. It's capitalist exploitation that does it. They are not inspired by that exploitation. They are fucking beaten to death by it. That's what produces this stuff. So it's not inspiration that makes people struggle. We can say, that's something that people, I don't know what, maybe because people watch too much sports or something. And they think like, oh, we're going to win. And
a good story.
Yeah, or something.
It's going to end up in a happy ending.
But we're going to take a break. All right, so we were discussing, right, could these mass movements be something of a significance for revolutionaries, or are they just going to be sort of killing the spirit of revolutionary people that could potentially be revolutionaries? I don't know. Just to quickly wrap up on that, because I wanted to say something and then I saw the time. I'm just being a little repetitive. I do feel inspired by it, as I had said as well, by the labor movement that we are experiencing here in the USA. I think that there has been a rise, given that I have seen, I mentioned last episode once, I forget, I think it was before the Will episodes, that I am seeing a rise in protests around the globe from previous years. And that could be many factors. It could be social media. It could be that people are really feeling oppressed and they're standing up for themselves. It could be many reasons. But when you see the percentages increasing of people protesting, it gives me hope that we can potentially have more, more than just protest around austerity measures or protest around a political scandal. It could be, you know what, this entire thing isn't working at all, we've realized, because we've been trying to protest on these specific things, and we really have to focus on the entire thing and dump it out. What did you want to say, Ken?
I mean, one thing that I take away from this is that, revolts, again, don't have to end the revolution. They very often don't. Of course, we have to be critical of what's happening, because especially in a world where information is even more manipulated than or more quickly manipulated than it was before, if the ideas, like Lipson said, are not there, like the foundations for building a socialist revolution, that to have a chance to overthrow capitalism, then of course I'm concerned. We've seen it in every country. I mean, the protests have been squashed with, highly repressive, fascist, police, and, with machinery and gear from Israel, from the U.S., and, so we always have to be critical, and it sucks to be the bad news person, like you said, but you have to be critical. We can't get carried away and say that's revolution, because again, that's what happened. Then you get people pushing for Daniel Ortega,
right,
who saw the benefits of the AOS?
OAS. The OAS. I know it as Organization of American States.
In Spanish, Organización de Estados Americanos.
Okay.
When Nicaragua was happening in 2018, you can see they're flip-flopping. Like, it was like, oh my God, what the f*** are you doing? And like, we mentioned Bolivia, and that was one obvious thing right there where, they released a preliminary report with no evidence, and that kind of catapulted a lot of people into revolt, and now the country is just fighting each other and maybe even risking an ethnic war of sorts
in Bolivia. You think?
Yeah,
I guess,
because I mean, it's kind of divided, like, there's the indigenous people and like the more mestizos, or I don't know if you guys even want to talk about Bolivia, whether is there any questions, whether it's because I had questions at the beginning.
You mentioned something that was interesting last time. You said that Bolivia was a prime example for what not to do.
Well, like, firstly, we've seen it with Lula, and we see it with Evo Morales. It shows you that mass movements like that are completely incapable of challenging the capitalists, completely of change, not just their own local capitalists, but obviously the big person, the big bully, the U.S. empire. It's obvious to me. It's obvious that, and I think more and more, I do believe now that U.S. was not trying to take down Ortega, because you can see what they bring to bear when they're trying to take somebody down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Ortega's still standing. Right? I mean, Lula da Silva was gone. Evo Morales gone.
And it's very interesting to me to see how they're using the Organization of American States to then sanction certain people in Venezuela, certain people in now Cuba is being included on the group.
I mean,
and now Bolivia. And what are they accusing them of being? Being terrorists.
Yeah.
They're accusing many of these people of being terrorists.
Yeah.
And so this is the language of the U.S. empire spreading its wings and expanding its...
Wait,
Who's using the language of terrorists?
OAS.
Yes. Yes. So in
even, and that's U.S. line, but that's the U.S. going yes. into the OAS yeah. Yeah. and basically saying, here's our case. Here's what you're going to say about them.
Ortega is using that language. They criminalize people. You know, and some of the people that helped the protests could be jailed for 30 years for being terrorists.
Because the people coming, and this is the accusation of some of the people from Venezuela going into Colombia.
Yeah.
These are a terrorist element
yeah.
coming in and fomenting problems. Now we've got these strikes going on. Maybe these are some of these Venezuelan terrorists who love Maduro.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the language. And that's the language of the U.S. empire.
Yeah.
That's exported by U.S. empire, and it's done with the idea that the U.S. knows that it's in a global war against Russia, global war against China. It's cracking up it's cracking up NATO. And it's basically saying we are laying claim to our territory in this fight for who's going to control the globe.
Yeah.
And the U.S. means business. And they are being successful right now.
Yeah.
Very successful. So that is what people, the working class of Chile, is taking on. The working class of Chile is not just taking on their own, you know, ruling class. They are taking on a U.S. empire that yeah. right now has... Not only is it on a tear of success in that hemisphere right now, mm-hmm. and not only has the movements that were supposed to be a challenge to them have receded and left in their wake Bolsonaro and other fascists,
yeah.
but look what's happening in the working class in the United States. We are sitting here watching the ping pong ball of impeachment hearings,
yeah.
which are really about rejigging the U.S. empire and about the rejigging mm-hmm. the U.S. security state. The Democrats are going around with this guy Schiff. You know, looking into everyone's mail and all sorts of stuff, and we have the left saying, "Yeah, let's do it." Yeah. If you're going to use the CIA to go after Trump, we support you. Well, we're fucked. If we're doing that, if the left is doing that, I mean, that is a very bad situation to be in. And again, I'm not saying this to be negative. I'm just saying we can't sit here and act like the things that the tide is turning in our favor
yeah.
when the U.S. is running a sledgehammer
yeah.
through the entire globe. You know, and admittedly, they have had a tough time in Syria and Iraq, and there's some interesting things going on there. But by and large, it's been amazing to me to watch how they recover and how they come back and swing hard. And we don't return the working class in the United States and the working class even globally. Are they up for that challenge at this point?
Yeah.
Unless they are prepared to take down the capitalists in their own country and know that that means that's a punch delivered to the United States, then they are not prepared.
And I think this could lead us to what you wanted to talk about, the IMF. And
yeah, I did, because it's like another form of colonization through economics.
It's an act. It's a weapon of war, economic war,
mm-hmm.
To me. You know,
imperialism.
Yeah, I mean, because you don't have countries that are occupied in Latin America, but you know, but yeah, they're being ravaged, you know, through these policies and you know, doing what capitalism is supposed to do, you know, inherently. To me, I mean,
yeah.
that's my
opinion. Yes.
Well, let's mention it though. I think the World Bank and the IMF these are the ways that it used to be that the USA used to go into a country and sort of meddle. Well, they still meddle, but I'm just saying more directly meddle.
Boots on the ground.
Yeah. On the ground.
Yeah.
But then when you have people in, especially Latin America, where you have people owing debt to the USA, then these are the reasons why we have austerity measures down in Latin America. And that's why there are increasing costs and increasing taxes.
Yeah.
And you have budget deficits for other things that you might need for social
right.
programs. And then that causes, you know, so everyone's tied, chained to these debt. And this is all part of the free trade movement. This is all part of the globalization. So I think that when we look at the economy that was trying to be done through the 80s and 90s, and this is what we're left with, and this is all in the system of capitalism, right? So, I mean, did you want to say something? I mean,
just maybe like a quick kind of like timeline, in, at least in my mind, that I think
please.
Is helpful.
Please.
You know, obviously, like before the 50s, a lot of Latin America was like feudal, you know, and a lot of peasants and a lot of oligarchs, you know, owning land. And like countries try to industrialize because you know, and that's where Castro comes into the picture, when you know, he gave that famous speech of, you know, history will absolve me, but he talks about, he has a nationalist like approach, saying, you know, why do we export sugar and we buy candy? Why do we export, you know, hide, and we buy, you know, leather jackets, bags, handbags, and all this. So a lot of countries try to industrialize, and obviously that failed for many reasons. And but a lot of that, those ideas continued through, you know, the 80s, and then, you know, the World Bank and the IMF come in telling them how to, you know, develop their economies, and basically entangle them in a web of debt that crashed in the 80s, you know, with Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, the bigger, you know, economies.
I think in Mexico, 1985, yeah. I think it was, yeah,
but
my country.
And the policies, so the IMF, one thing they do is they, if in order for the loan money to the country to engage in economic, you know, in, stimulation, they require the implementation of the Washington Consensus, the policies that, again, basically lower any barriers for business, lower taxes for corporations, open the markets, or basically open the labor, the country's labor, to international markets, mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's really extractionary in nature, privatizing things and that, and so yeah. Yeah. And then when they have to squeeze, they come and they do that.
Right.
Like, you know, again, when I talked about Nicaragua in previous episodes, but let's not forget that that wasn't the small, the flashpoint that started the revolt in Nicaragua was older people protesting about their pensions being cut. Mm-hmm. This is happening in France. This happened, you know, it's happening in Colombia and Chile, or, you know, to some degree. But
by the way, there's a general strike right now in Paris. I should mention that. I'm sorry.
But ultimately, it's you know, a weapon of control of you know, the ruling classes, really, of those countries. I mean, that to me, that's a way they've been able to pass a lot of third country agreements in Central America. You know, that are very safe country agreements, mm-hmm. basically requiring asylum seekers to have to apply through the first country they cross. Mm-hmm. You know, countries that can't support, you know, masses of refugees.
Right.
And so in that way, I think Trump has built his wall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, right. and it's not a physical wall, but, I mean, where are the caravans now?
Right, right. Yes, and then he was doing that whole thing where he was getting other states to say, you have to, he did this thing on an asylum where he got certain, like, I think Ecuador was one of the states, mm-hmm. countries where they would ask them questions about asylum before they would let them cross their border.
Yeah.
And so he was getting other people in Central America to do his dirty work.
Yeah. And they've fallen in line. I mean, Salvador, Honduras, yeah.
And that's what's, to me, so significant, is that shows the look, as weak, I think that there's been a, and I've been fallen guilty to it as well, as to think that the U.S. has got itself, its hand deeply caught in the Middle East, mm-hmm. like as if they're trapped there. And that should, you know, you'd think when that happens, it makes it harder for them to make their military moves. But they're remilitarizing their whole operation in South America. It's the war on drugs again. Yeah. And that means that they're dominant again. And the thing, oh, go ahead.
No, just one of the things that has sparked protests in Colombia is, you know, that agreement, that peace agreement that the government had reached with the rebel forces.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's be real, you know, a lot of the war on drugs, if it ends, you know, if, or this, you know, war against the rebel groups ends, then the U.S. has no incentive to be on top of the pipelines, you know, and next to Venezuela, the biggest oil reserves in the world, proven oil reserves in the world.
Yeah.
Yep. And maybe to, you know, to the left, Bolivia, the biggest lithium reserves, you know, for our green revolution in the U.S.
Thank you. I see your curtain. So the thing I was thinking about, because the stuff you're talking about IMF and World Bank, the structural adjustment programs that are imposed to say, if you're going to get these loans, if you're going to get this money to allow you to invest, then these are these state assets have to be sold and then privatized, and you're going to have to make cuts to your pensions, you're going to have to make cuts to what you pay state workers, you're going to have to discipline your unions and things like that. All those things are totally true. But what I'm reminded of, and when we think about the strategies used by left-leaning governments to say, we're not going to use the United States, we're going to reach out to Europe, we're going to reach out to China. Well, what's China doing? China's doing, I think it's called the Silk Road mm-hmm. Initiative, which is paved with IMF structural adjustment. In fact, the U.S. is telling people, don't join the Silk Road thing mm-hmm. because they're just trying to get you into a debt trap. and it's absurd. It's like the United States saying to Russia, don't meddle in our elections yeah. when they're sitting there, they've got their hands in everyone's cookie pot, yeah. you know, cookie yeah. jar. And it's absurd for the United States to tell people don't go invest with China because they're going to get you in a debt trap. But it's true, actually.
Yeah.
It's true. So do you want to be in the U.S. debt trap or do you want to be in China's debt trap? Who do you want to be beholden to? What capitalist empire, essentially, do you want to be beholden to? And I'm not concerned about who's subordinating themselves to China because I'm in the United States and this is the country that has the government that we need to take down here, you know, so I'm not going to be getting into that whole thing of like, oh, what the China's doing? Look how bad, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that there is no way out. There's no shelter under this system. There's nowhere you can go to hide from structural adjustment programs. You're either going to get it from Europe or you're going to get it from China or you're going to get it from the United States. And, you know, maybe you get nicer terms,
yeah.
but once that empire becomes stronger, the terms get meaner. You know, that's how it's going to work. You know, they're just going to squeeze you at that point. So, and that's what the U.S. is trying to foreclose, right? They're trying to get out China, get out Russia, and make it so that they have complete control and dominance in that hemisphere again.
And that was one of the things that, at least in theory, Hugo Chavez was trying to do with Mercosur
right.
to circumvent this, you know, trap right. of...
Yeah. But all that was underwritten with Venezuelan oil.
Yeah.
And when the U.S. could use Saudi Arabia
yeah.
to, like, lower the price of oil and crash the Russian economy and crash the Venezuelan economy... That's all they had. I mean, it's not the only, but those were the sorts. I mean, it's the U.S. is a massive global octopus. Yeah. And the thing that makes me most concerned is how little we have to bring to bear here
mm-hmm.
to try to alleviate the tentacles of this octopus.
Yeah.
Because right now we are so caught up in, again, I have to come back to this impeachment stuff, the DSA and the elections. People thinking these elections are going to bring us anything
yeah.
other than, like, if the Democrats win, we have that is probably the more aggressive war-making party right now, you know?
Trump has shown some restraint, I think.
And the Democrats right now are the party of the deep state, of the CIA, of the security state,
yeah.
and they are the party of major military operations. So, and again, it's not like I'm telling you to vote for Trump. I'm just telling you, that's what's on offer.
Yeah.
So if you want to be involved in that game, and if you want to think that somehow... Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders is taking a bite out of that monster? I mean, yeah. Grow up. I mean, think about it. Do you really think that these little peanuts are taking down the elephant? No, it's not going to happen. And in fact, what's happening is those are actually bringing us right into the elephant's, you know, mouth, and we're getting shat out like a little elephant poop. So socialism is just being destroyed here in this country with DSA. That's what's happening. Greg doesn't agree. I mean, my comrade Greg, he thinks there's something there, and we can, you know, use that's the only game in town. But that's the very problem, is they think it, because they make it the only game in town, we're getting wrecked.
Yeah.
And it's from that kind of point of view, as I look around here, that I have to ask myself, what's in Chile?
Yeah.
What is in Chile that's actually fighting for something that's different? If I hear it, if it only has to be two people, but...
I'll go to the ground.
But those are the sorts of things I'm going to need to hear to get me excited about the context of that class struggle, you know, because if that's not there, then...
I don't know what value we can get from, you know, these revolts, that's why I call them, but... you know, we're basically in the same situation Chile is.
Yeah.
You know, like students in massive debt. You know, privatization of schools is, you know, something we're fighting. You know, obviously stagnation of salaries and stuff. Blah, blah, blah. But you know, nothing happened here. It's concerning.
You know, when you mentioned something about the Democrats, I feel as if with AMLO in Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the president of Mexico, it sort of gave me a glimpse. He was considered like the Bernie Sanders of Mexico.
Yeah.
And I just it gave me a glimpse of like how there is still isn't enough that he is able to do in his position as one of the highest positions of the country, and so much idealism that he has and has not been able to implement, which has given me change in thought about who to elect for this next presidential.
But it shows you the limitations of reformist democratic socialism, you know, because you're attaching yourself to capitalism. You're not changing fundamentally that relationship of the working class and the capitalists. You know, it's just hoping that you can't filter, you know, or restrain capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, because I've literally heard people saying that, you know, capitalism is just, you know, going astray. You know, it's just really like capitalism is doing what it's supposed to do.
Exactly what it's supposed to do.
You know, things are working how they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, like our educational system, I was the other day talking about this with people, but, you know, I heard the New York Times saying our system is not working. No, it is working.
Right.
You know, it's educating, you know. There, we have some of the best, you know, high schools, but they're not accessible to everyone, just for the elite.
Right.
And they then pick and choose a few, you know, people of color, and then those people come back to our communities and regurgitate that bullshit, you know.
And we use that to say racism is soft.
Yeah, yeah. And then that, to me, like, I see these people that go in there, and yeah, they may mean well, but it's ultimately Trojan horses because they're selling us lies. Yeah. We keep buying that bullshit that as long as you have good, you know, laws that restrain capitalism, you know, capitalism will not do its thing, you know, and that is the biggest lie that we keep buying. Or people don't want to, you know, just say, fuck with this.
Yeah, we are going to, where it has, I mean, it's going to have to go there. And so,
well, I mean, I don't have anything else to say, but I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. And I know this was a more important conversation, actually, than the Democrats won or whatever.
Which you can always wait.
Yeah.
We still have all until
the new cycle.
Buttigieg. I got to know how to pronounce that guy's name.
I don't know. You're
Chesapeake?
No,
I mean, that's another one. Sorry. I know.
I won't need to know Kamala Harris's name. she's out. Yeah, so.
Another exceptional one.
Pete Buttigieg. It was it was that was not as important as kind of like me just thinking this through. And Kenny, I'm glad you were here for this. And it continues to bring me back to some of the discussions we've had about Nicaragua and how to assess what the U.S. was doing there. Because I actually think you can see each time they get this done right, I can see that they did not bring this kind of pressure to bear on Nicaragua.
No, and like you know, a lot of my Nicaraguan friends may disagree with me, but they don't understand that they are in the fight against capitalism, in that, you know, Ortega wasn't put in there in that position by the U.S., but that's their guy.
Yeah, right.
That's their guy.
Right.
And, you know, so you are in the fight
against capitalism. He got there by an end run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so you are in the fight against capitalism too.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, connect the dots.
Yeah.
You know, what we're fighting here, fighting there, it's, you know,
it's the same
people
thing.
In Chile and Colombia and France and the UK, you know, with the whole Brexit shit.
Yeah.
But
then there'll be supposedly, which is the country that's doing like endless, it's one in South America that's doing no end to their general strike. It's just a slogan.
I think Chile has had the most sustained strikes.
Maybe that's Chile saying that. And now they're going to try it. They're talking about that kind of starting something, I think, today in France.
Yeah.
They're talking about that. So those are, there are lessons you do learn from doing that. We'll see.
Today was the general strike that I saw happening in Paris.
In France. And it's supposed to be ongoing. They've been doing some one-day ones, but supposedly this is going to be ongoing.
Yeah.
And
they should organize with the students, and they should organize with labor movements. They should, once you start getting really organized in this way, you can get deliberate.
Right, but it can also be controlled by those institutions.
Yeah.
And those institutions have an agenda that is more tied to, you know, Macron, you know, than they are to people, the working class. I mean, I think that's true.
And Iraq was able to have some of their diplomats resign.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it threw a bone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what happened in Puerto Rico. We didn't talk, I mean, slightly different, but Puerto Rico basically, but under the same, fiscal dictatorship, but the U.S. basically has them under control. And the people rose up against their leader. He was right. They threw a bone, and
they got a new leader.
Yeah, and doing the same shit. I mean, and running the same system.
Yeah, yeah. So people are going to have to learn, and so we'll see. We'll see.
Right. Well, thank you for joining us, Kenny and Andy.
I'm always here. But yeah, definitely thanks, Kenny.
Thank you.
And Eduardo, thanks for insisting on this being the topic.
You had said we were going to do it.
No, I'm saying thank you for insisting.
And then you decided to change it.
I don't know. I was getting... this guy doesn't want to participate. That's why I actually texted this guy to say, does Lipson want to participate? Because...
I don't know,
there's people in the South fighting too.
Change it up, Andy.
I only care about my European brothers and sisters. I don't
know. Oh my God. As long as you can relate to.
Exactly.
Goodness.
Eduardo's gonna have me cut that one.
I know.
He's gonna tell me to cut it. I'm gonna say no.
No, we want to create controversy to get more people to watch the show.
There's a stalking horse white nationalist doing that in that show. But no,
it takes two Latin Americans to try to fight for this episode.
It was the right thing to do, and I'm glad you didn't convince me, but I'm glad it happened.
At least I showed up. I'm here, and I
facts on the ground, occupied.
I got called for reinforcements.
Yeah. So,
thank you all who have been able to stay until this long for the episode. And this concludes our episode for this for tonight. We will discuss what next week, maybe.
I don't know. I mean,
I was thinking.
There
is the climate change convention happening in Madrid. In I think it's Madrid. Yeah,
it was. It happened already, right?
No.
It did
before NATO. And then you know, NATO, their
picture out of touch. I was on vacation, so
yeah.
Back home.
I mean, Pelosi saved us. I mean, she went there, represented Democrats.
Jesus.
He doesn't like hearing that. Let's have Kenny here for this episode.
I, if you want me to. I mean,
I didn't even remember. Maybe I was out. I was out of town. I was in Mexico.
If you do have that conversation, talk about the sunrise movement and how they're putting their faith behind the Democratic Party.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure what we'll do, but
that might be one that we might consider. We'll see. Okay. We'll always see, right?
Yes. We'll see.
But we didn't see when you decided to
engineer things behind
all
the scenes.
Three episodes of Will.
That
nothing
was really,
to say against Will.
Yeah, don't let him hate you, Will. I think those are the best episodes we've ever had. Even Eduardo doesn't like him, but you know.
All right.
Just had an idea. We should do like short videos of Bad News Central.
The bad news for today.
Not good news.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And we invite our listeners and new listeners and viewers to check us out and subscribe to any of our five platforms on BitChute, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes Podcast, or YouTube. Please subscribe, rate, and review. And best of all, share with your family and community. This concludes our episode for tonight.
See you next week.
Ciao.